national and spiritual support for Catholic homeschooling families in that Dallas and Fort Worth area. And so what Teach Robotics is we are a robotics team built off of that organization. So we have families who have to be in that amazing organization to be part of our robotics team.
Awesome. And TEACH, again, stands for Texas Association of Catholic Homeschoolers.
Yes.
And so you've started this robotics team, which has been around for a little bit. Well, and I actually was on it for a singular year back when I was in high school, when I was a senior in high school. And many of my siblings and friends have also been on it. And so it's a super cool organization that they're able to do this. But specifically, can you talk a little bit how the season works, Nathan? So people are understanding, they're like, what exactly does this mean to compete with a robot? Yeah. What is all that about?
So how the season works is at the very beginning, usually early September or so, there's a kickoff. And we all go to a high school in the Fort Worth area, and they show us, you know, here's the objective. We want you to build a robot that can do these certain tasks and fulfill these duties. And then from there, we are given a six weeks. And at the end of the 6 weeks is the game day or competition day. And so in that 6 weeks, we have to build a robot and build a marketing presentation. And so that's really where our team gets its structure. And it's really interesting because we have so many different departments. We have an engineering department and a marketing department, and they have to each do their own individual thing, but come together to build this product that we will like see the product of our work on the competition day. And there's two different competitions that we can compete for when we're there. There's one called the Best Award, and the other is called the Game Award. And the Game Award is strictly how many points the robot can score on the field. And then we have the Best Award, and how the Best Award works is that's mainly where we see the marketing team work during the 6 week competition. We have to build a marketing presentation, and we have to write a engineering notebook and design a booth in order to sell our robot. And so the Best Award focuses on, you know, more of not only just the robot scores, but also how we're able to sell our robot and how we're able to present our robot and make it look really good.
Mm, so much more like a business end of things that you're making a sales pitch to get it. So that's super cool. And then Krishna Putra, the Chief Operating Officer, can you talk a little bit about what BEST is? That is a competition you all participate in.
Yes. So BEST Robotics is a nationwide robotics organization and stands for Boosting Engineering, Science, and Technology. And it started in Texas by two TI engineers. So it's concentrated in Texas, but it does go all around the nation. So we have been competing in that competition for the last 26 years or so.
Wow, that's pretty awesome. A long time. Really quickly, I want to also bring into the conversation Anastasia Vasquez, who is the Chief Marketing Officer. And Anastasia, can you talk about a little bit about the aspect of being homeschooler and this? So that's because it's not just for homeschoolers, is that right? All the people competing in BEST, I should say.
Yes. So I definitely think being homeschooled is an advantage for us as a team. We get to meet a lot, have a lot more hours than many of our competitors who meet just after school. We meet on Mondays from 1 to 6 and on Fridays from 1 to 9. So that is really long hours. And then as well as our engineering team meets on Saturdays, and that time just kind of varies based on schedule. But it really gives us the flexibility to really invest our time into robotics without being limited by a rigid school schedule. We can adapt to our learning around the season, which also teaches us to be independent and self-motivated. Plus, it also gives us an opportunity to keep our Catholic faith at the center of everything we do, which is something unique that I admire about our team.
Mm, that's really awesome. And probably everyone who's listening right now, they're like, okay, all of them sound like they're very knowledgeable in what they're doing right now. So maybe let's go around and have you all say what your role is on the team and how long you've been involved with TEACH Robotics. Let's start with you, Nathan.
Alrighty. So first of all, I've been on the team for 8 years, which is actually the longest anyone's ever been on TEACH Robotics.
Did you get a badge for that?
I wish. A little bit of a flex. But yeah, and as I've been on the team, you know, I started as a grunt in programming, and I worked my way up, and through my 8 years, as I went along, I earned more and more leadership roles. And to this year, I get to be the CEO. in previous years, I've been like in charge of the IT department, which works on website and programming. But this year I get to be CEO, and it's so interesting because before, when I was grounded into a specific department, I had to kind of stay in that department. But now as CEO, I'm allowed to go anywhere I want and to see if anybody has questions or needs advice or help with anything. And I get to visit all three departments and really see how our three departments come together and work.
And Krishna, what about your role as Chief Operating Officer?
Yeah, so I'm second in charge of Teach Robotics. I get to kind of oversee the whole team. I'm also the notebook director, so I'm going to work on the design process, documenting the design process of our robot and of our software for the robot, and also a little bit about how we integrate safety into our workspace and how, and a little research paper about the theme this year.
That's awesome. It's a big responsibility. a lot of things to do. And Anastasia, tell us a little bit about your role.
I have been on the team for 3 years, and as Chief Marketing Officer, I oversee all of the marketing aspects that go into it, our booth, our presentation team. And before, in prior years, I started off as notebook and editing slides. And actually, my first year, because one of our presentation team members got sick, I had to step in with only 24 hours memorize something. So my role is making sure that the team has a strong presence in the community, as well as handling outreach, sponsorships, branding, and communication.
Mm. That's awesome. You all have very important roles to play, and it's cool to see how you've grown and where you started and now where you are today and this year. And Krishna, I imagine some people listening right now are probably like still trying to picture what exactly a robotics competition looks like. And each year has a theme. So maybe if you explain a little bit about the theme and kind of how the gameplay works, it might help people understand what is happening when you talk about robotics.
Yes. So the theme this year is factoids with the A and the I capitalized, to emphasize the AI. So this year, well, so every year our robot has to fit inside a 2-foot by 2-foot cube. And it also is required to use only the materials designated by Best Robotics. So we have some constraints on how we're able to do things. But they do give us a lot of raw materials, so we're able to construct a whole wide variety of things. We've had a long arm. We've been able to create our base with PVC or wood. There's a lot of flexibility still. And then the game this year, the task assigned by Best is for our robot to sort true and false factoids, is what they call it. But it's basically a bunch of golf balls or PVC pipes with different weights inside them. And we have to sort them based on either, and they're also magnetic, so based on either weight or magnetism.
Wow.
I have to figure out that.
I am so glad I'm not building this robot. But I think that was very helpful, though, for some people who are listening. If you're just tuning in, I'm talking to Teach Robotics, which is a local Catholic homeschool robotics team that is competing in the Best Competition, which will be taking place on November 1st. So it'll be coming up here in a few weeks. And if you go to their website, teachrobots.org, you can kind of follow along on their journey. You can also follow them on Instagram, which I think is at teachrobotics, or is it at teachrobotics?
Right.
Perfect. It was simple. I just... had to make sure. And you can also follow along there. And I'm sure as it gets closer, when they can have some information about the live stream, because you can go to this competition, but you can also watch it if you're curious, or maybe this is something your child might be interested in next year, which is a good point. Nathan, can you talk a little bit briefly about who can participate? We mentioned that anyone had to be part of Teach Robotics, Teach the organization, Texas Association of Catholic Homeschoolers, but what ages, and then maybe roughly how many people you have on the team this year?
Yeah, so this year we have 22 members on our team. And those ages, we don't necessarily go by age, we go more by grade, and that's 5th through 12th grade. So we like to consider ourselves a high school robotics team, however, because that's usually how it works out.
Sure.
But we do accept, you know, younger members on the team. If you would like to join, you can contact us, as Sistel said, through our website, www.teachrobots.org. And we have lots of ways you can contact us through there. And so that's probably the best course of action. If you are interested in joining our team, or even if you wanted to donate or something like that. We do accept monetary donations.
Just wants to make sure that you note that and go to teachrobots.org to contact them about that. And Anastasia, as the chief marketing officer, you talked about doing a lot of outreach and making sure, you know, the communications aspect of your team, because not only are you building a robot, but you're also trying to sell the robot and get things like sponsorships. What kind of outreach have you all done this year?
Yeah, so this year, over the summer, we donated and made as a team. This year, as a team, we've donated or we've done and made 700 STEM kits and donated them to Christian Community Action. We also like to volunteer at local churches such as St. Philip Catholic Church in Flowermound and at Our Lady of Lebanon Catholic Church in Louisville. And what we do at these festivals or organizations that they have is we take last year's robot, in this case Ursa, which is our name from last year, and we allow children to drive last year's robot while doing some tasks that we might set up, as well as promoting STEM best and our team. And then we also do radio broadcasting.
Like this one.
Like this one. And actually a funny story from this year, we had a former member who was on our team, but they recently moved to Ohio. And so they reached out to us and asked us if we could help give them advice on what to do in participating in this best robotics competition. So I know Nathan and Krishna actually met with them over Zoom and gave them some advice about that.
Oh, that's really cool. That's awesome. Yeah, so you're able to help other areas also grow in building this. And I think it's very cool to not only for you all to get the skills of, you know, the ones of you that are building the robot to kind of all those technical skills, but also just a lot of other great skills come along the way because you're having to work with one another, you have to do leadership, you have to do marketing. So what I want to ask you each one by one to talk about, like, what kind of skills have you all picked up throughout the process? And we'll start with you, Krishna.
Okay. Well, so I've been in the team for a while, so I've had a lot of skills picked up through the years. But the first year, I think the biggest takeaway was reading engineering drawings. So I was supposed to build the field for our robot to practice on. So I had to learn some 200 pages of engineering drawings and learn how to construct the field out of that. So that was a good learning curve. It was pretty sharp learning curve, but
yeah, I'm sure it was.
It was pretty fun too.
That's
and then
awesome.
Later, as I got into leadership roles, I learned how to delegate and how to communicate better with people. And I also have learned how to use CAD, which I'm really excited to use. I've enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, CAD. Oh, that's a whole thing. And Anastasia, what about you?
Being chief marketing officer has taught me a lot about leadership and communication and how important it is. I've had to coordinate with sponsors, marketing materials, organize events, and also lead a team of students in making sure our brand really reflects who we are. An unexpected skill for me personally is I had to pick up adaptability, which something for me is really hard. But robotics has taught me to be better at that because sometimes things don't always go as planned. And we have a last minute design change. And I've had to learn how to pivot quickly while keeping our team's vision strong.
Mm. And you, Nathan?
Yeah, so just like Krishna and Anastasia said, I think there's two main things that I can really talk about that I've really, you know, learn throughout the years. And I could be here forever listing all the things. This is so many things that I've learned to grow in. But I guess those two main things are leadership and communication, just like Anastasia said, or communication as in teamwork. And because our team could not come together without the teamwork. If we had our different departments doing their different individual things, but then having to come together in order to make this competition work. But the teamwork wouldn't work if we didn't have leadership, if we didn't have managers and vice presidents and a board of directors directing this and keeping the flow of the progress going. So those are the two things that I've learned the most, is working with other people and leadership. And those things are things that I'll really be able to apply to my life and use in the future when I go off to get a job in the real world or something like that. Leadership and teamwork, I think, are two of the most important things.
That's awesome. That's Nathan Miner, the CEO of Teach Robotics. And we're also joined with Krishna Putra, the COO, and Anastasia Vasquez, the Chief Marketing Chief Marketing Officer here on the interview of the week. And they are competing in a local robotics competition with this Catholic homeschool robotics team, Teach Robotics. You can find out more about them at teachrobots.org, teachrobots.org, or you can also follow them on Instagram at Teach Robotics. Robotics, and also check out the whole competition, which is bestrobotics.org. And the competition's coming up on November 1st, so in a little bit we'll ask how you all can be involved, how you can support, how you can maybe come and watch. But before all that, as was mentioned earlier, Anastasia, you talked about how what impressed you most about your team is that you all were Catholic homeschoolers. And how, Nathan, do you all keep the Catholic identity first and foremost in your team, especially since most of the teams you're competing against are not going to be Catholic? A lot of them are not even going to be Christian. So how is that important, and how do you all do that?
Yeah, so the most direct way we see it is we pray, and we pray at the beginning of every meeting and we pray at the end of every meeting. It's a good opening to our day and closing. And as the season goes on and have these meetings, depending on what we need, like how important that day is, the more we pray. As we get closer to the competition, you know, things start getting more stressful. We'll actually, instead of spending less time praying, we'll spend more time praying. Mm. And we'll start praying things like the rosary or Divine Mercy chaplets, things that tend to take longer, because that's the most important and the goal of the team. And we see the difference between that and some of our competitors, because, you know, they're public school teams or they're private school teams, and they don't necessarily have, you know, the core Catholic or Christian morals and values that we would see throughout our team. And so I think that's really something that really helps benefit in the teamwork of our team, is because we have these Christian values that we can see going throughout.
Mm. And I hear a rumor that is there a patron saint of robotics in general, or is there someone that we've chosen?
There is a patron saint of robotics. It's Saint Macrina. So she wrote to our brother about how to work a helicopter or something of that sort back when, I don't know, like in the 5th century or so.
Oh my gosh.
It was really early church, and Saint Macrina the Younger. So that's our patron saint every year, patron saint of robotics.
That's super fun. I love when like saints who are well ahead of certain technology are the patron saints of that technology, like St. Clair of Assisi is the patron of TV. I think that's really fun. Yeah. But you also have a patron pick specifically for this year, is that right?
Yes.
And who is that?
Our patron saint this year is St. Carlo Acutis, the newly canonized saint. So this year is about AI and factoids. And so we thought, well, St. Carlo Acutis was a programmer, and he would be a nice fit about our technology themed this year. Yeah.
And hopefully a good intercessor if things go terribly wrong, as technology is known to do. Again, we're talking to Teach Robotics. We only just have a few minutes remaining in this conversation, but I wanted to ask each of you first, let me ask Nathan, can you speak to a little bit of how people listening can get involved, support you all? Like, what options are there on the table for people who are listening?
Of course, yeah. I think the most direct way and easiest way to contact us is to go to our website, which, as Sissel said, is www.teachrobots.org. And there you can find, you know, all of our contact information, phone numbers, email, if you want to get involved. But there's also a page where you can donate if you would like to donate, because our team, you know, unlike our public or private school competitors, have a constant source of funding from their school, and we don't have that as a
homeschooling team. Yeah,
exactly.
You just don't have the same funding for sure.
Exactly. So we have to bring in sponsors and donors in order to fund our team and to pay for materials for our field and robot and that stuff. So if you would like to donate, that is truly grateful. Or if you just want to hear about how you can get involved and maybe think about possibly joining the team, just go to our website.
teachrobots.org. And also, again, the competition is going to be coming up on November 1st. And if they do well there, you'll get to move on to regionals, which will happen later this year as well. So we'll pray for that, so that people have lots of opportunities to come see Teach Robotics. But I imagine if you go to their website, and also if you go to bestrobotics.org, you can find out more information about that competition, where it'll be, and also the live stream if they have that as this year as well. But before we close out, I would like to ask each of you all just to talk a little bit about maybe what you're planning to do in the future, especially since you all are on the higher end of high school. So you're thinking towards what your future might look like. So just going one at a time about maybe what your plans are, and if maybe some of the things you've learned in Teach Robotics has kind of influenced that. And we'll go around this way, and we'll start with Krishna.
Well, so I'm a junior. I still haven't decided what I'm going to do, but I have learned and found an interest in engineering. So that is something that I'm thankful for Best Robotics for the opportunity, and being the ability to do CAD and to read engineering drawings, have and the necessity of being creative and finding a way to solve the way they set up the game. Mm. I think it's just been a lot of fun and has definitely kind of pushed me toward the STEM side and something in the future for me to do.
Awesome. And Anastasia, what about you?
I am a senior this year, so I have decided that I'm going to major in political science with a minor in business. I want to pursue law. Not sure what type of law yet, but we're getting there. robotics has taught me a lot of skills that translate, like presenting ideas clearly, debating solutions, and leading under pressure. Being CMO has also helped me to learn how to communicate effectively and work differently with different kinds of people, which I know will help me being an attorney. And above all, my Catholic faith grounds me in service and perseverance, which I plan to carry into whatever career I choose.
Awesome. And finally, the CEO, Nathan, how about you?
Yeah. So just like Krishna, I'm still an undecided major, which I'm a senior this year, so I should probably decide pretty soon.
You're busy running a whole robotics company, though.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. But I think the two things that I'm most looking into for my career, it's really interesting because they are cybersecurity and business. And those are the two main departments that I was in while I was on the team. I was on the programming department, so I helped program the robot and design the website. And so I found that cybersecurity is just really interesting. And I really like the workforce because it's used all throughout the world. And then also business, because I was on, you know, the marketing presentation team. We have to sell the robot. And I like that so much that I'm really thinking about a business in marketing or sales or something like that.
That's awesome. We've been talking to three of the leadership from Teach Robotics, and they are well into their robotic season right now. The Catholic Homeschool Robotics team. So if you want to learn more about them, or if maybe someone you know or your child is interested in this, go to teachrobots.org, teachrobots.org. Their competition's coming up on November 1st. You can find out more information about what that is going to look like, because honestly, just attending the competition or watching it on the live stream is a lot of fun, even if you don't have an interest in robotics and don't want to build them yourself. But it's a really cool effort that they're able to do, where not only are they learning lots of good life skills that'll carry into the rest of their lives and the workforce, but they're also able to practice their faith in a very public way as well. So I want to thank Nathan Miner, the CEO, Krishna Putra, the COO, and Anastasia Vasquez, the CMO, for joining me today on the interview of the week.
Yeah. Thank you,
Cecil.
Thank you for having us.
Of course. And if you ever have an idea for other interviews, feel free to reach out to Dave and I. You can email kath@grnonline.com. That's kath@grnonline.com. And thank you all so much for listening, and have a great rest of your Saturday afternoon.
Thinking about becoming a priest? Men who are high school age or older in the Diocese of Dallas are invited to a St. Andrew's dinner to learn more about the priesthood. Join Bishop Burns, priests, and seminarians from the diocese for an evening of prayer and discernment. The St. Andrew's dinner will take place on Tuesday evening, October 28th, from 6 to 9 p.m. at All Saints Catholic Church in Dallas. For more information or to register, visit dallasvocations.org. Click on events.
Well, hi, everybody, and thanks so much for tuning in to the North Texas Interview of the Week here on the Guadalupe Radio Network. This is an opportunity for us to let you know about really good news and Catholic events and things going on in the area. And this interview here is really, really special for so many reasons. And I think you're going to agree that this is an important topic and just a fabulous story and a really, really cool event that's coming up. And what it is, we're going to be talking about the Catholic Music Initiative. And this is Dave and Lauren Moore, who founded the Catholic Music Initiative. And you may be aware that earlier this year, Lauren suffered some pretty serious health issues and has been rehabilitating most of this year. But they are going to be Lauren's first public performance since being hospitalized with Guillain-Barré syndrome is going to be Tuesday, November 4th of this year, 7:30 p.m. at the Meyerson Symphony Center. They both joined me on the phone to talk about this and this really incredible 2025 year that they have had. And before I introduce them, I just want to let you know, if you go to that website, you can find out about them at Catholic Music Initiative. They say, we embrace the transformative power of beautiful liturgy, bringing timeless sacred music to the forefront of worship. Our mission is to infuse simplicity, prayerfulness, and a deep God orientation into every note, fostering a profound sense of reverence and communal participation in the Mass. So that's by way of introduction. Dave and Lauren Moore, thank you so much for taking time. It's a real honor to talk to you today.
Thank you, David.
Thank you, Dave.
All right. So, you know, before we get to what happened in January of 2025, let's go back a little bit, because last summer in 2024, you all were leading the music at the Eucharistic Congress in Indianapolis, and it just seemed like everything was just flowing so perfectly for y'all. Maybe that's too rosy of a picture, but Dave, talk about 2024, because I know 2025 is its own story, but that was a really, yeah, really kind of a climatic event for y'all last summer at that Congress, wasn't it?
Last summer was a very, very incredible kind of summit point from about a year to a year and a half's worth of planning and writing music. You know, we wrote 2,000 pages of music for the closing Mass alone, because we had, you know, a full choir and the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra and an organist and all these different wonderful people in the church joining us for this closing Mass. And so, you know, every ounce of extra time that we, you know, were able to give after serving our primary ministry here in the Diocese of Dallas, all that extra time went to, you know, making sure that music was ready, that we put the right people in place, and that the Lord was honored and glorified well by the music at the National Eucharistic Congress. And so, you know, I think maybe I had a naive idea that as soon as the Congress was done, I would tip my hat and ride off into the sunset. But it wasn't quite like that. There was a lot of closing down of things and, you know, making sure that the paperwork was right and filed away so that statistically we would know what worked, what didn't work. You know, all the licensing stuff was done. And so it really kind of carried on slowly into the rest of the year. And I'll never forget, you know, we came back from visiting my parents, who are elderly, in Corpus, and Lauren's parents are also in Corpus. And we came back, I guess it was, you know, shortly after New Year's, because in our minds, we were preparing for playing music for the pro-life Mass at the cathedral, which is it's an event whether we're playing at or whether or not, we always show up for and try and participate in, is the march. And our diocese puts that together so well every year. And so with the CPLC ministry. And so we're gearing up for that. And we got the flu. That was like the first window of time that we were like, all right, we've got this break. And it was like the Lord allowed us to take a Franciscan vacation. He allowed us to get sick and like fully come to a rest point. And that's really where the story with Lauren kind of began, was we all had the flu. And then all of a sudden, like, I got better. Abigail got better, our six-year-old daughter, but Lauren's symptoms kept lingering.
Yeah.
And I went to wake her up one morning, Dave, and she was paralyzed from the waist down. I had to carry her into the car to take her to the ER. It was shocking.
Yeah, it really was for obviously for y'all principally, but I think for everybody to see this happen, because it did shut down your lives. It shut down, of course, Catholic Music Initiative. And Lauren, why don't you take it from there, from your perspective, that you know, getting the flu and then not recovering, and maybe explain what is Guillain-Barré syndrome that you were diagnosed with.
Yes. So as Dave said, he carried me out of the house to the emergency room. And, you know, I didn't know what was going to happen. I thought maybe, you know, I need to rest more. I need to drink more water. And we show up, and sure enough, the emergency room says, okay, you just need to get hydrated. And so we went home, and, you know, I didn't really get any better the next day. And then so we went back, Dave, you know, hauling me over there again. And it was at that moment where everything, I realized that this was something very serious. It wasn't just exhaustion. It wasn't just dehydration, but there was a lot of unknown. And I was like, okay, Lord, like whatever this is, like, I know that you're calling me to trust you, because even at the National Eucharistic Congress, I felt a very clear voice from the Lord say, you know, you can always trust me no matter what season you're in, and especially now. And I really believe he was preparing me to go through this. So I get to the hospital, and they start doing tests. And a few days into it, we get the lumbar puncture, which is the only way to diagnose Guillain-Barré syndrome, which is an autoimmune disorder that's spiked by a virus, typically sometimes a vaccine. And it was the flu A that triggered this in my body. And it slowly attacks your peripheral nervous system. So like from your hands, your extremities, and it slowly creeps in. And so, you know, thankfully, we were able to get the diagnosis, you know, by the grace of God, fast enough to where it was creeping through my body, and it eventually reached up towards my lungs, my diaphragm, the place where I breathe and where I sing from. And it's like, okay, Lord, I know that, again, like your hand is on me and through this, but I have to surrender. I can't do this on my own. And you know, Dave was such a rock through this whole process. And he was constantly talking to the doctors, trying to figure out every angle of which to come from to figure out what we should do next. Because I was reacting very poorly to some of the medicines, and even the first type of treatment, which is called IVIG, which is typically used for Guillain-Barré patients. I had an anaphylactic reaction to that. So I was, you know, they immediately, you know, got me off of that treatment. And the next course of action was to do plasmapheresis, which is where it's a plasma exchange in the body. So it took five donors and five rounds of treatment of plasma go in and basically give me an oil change of plasma in my entire body. Which, you know, all the while, it was a very painful process. The nerves, the myelin sheath around my nerves, basically, you know, it sort of disappears, disintegrates, and the nerves are all exposed. And I could feel my entire back. It felt like it was on fire. And we're trying to mitigate it with pain medication, but it was so interesting that every medication they'd give me, the fire kept getting worse and worse. So I was like, Lord, like, please, please come to my aid. And the beautiful thing was, through all of this, through the treatment of this plasma, I had, you know, daily mass dead in the emergency room right before we did my first treatment. Father Edwin came, and I wasn't able to receive the precious body. I wasn't really able to swallow. So I was able to receive the Lord with a drop of the precious blood. And it was, you know, I think of like the psalm, like the Lord is my comfort and my help. And that is, I mean, it was in that moment. I was like, the Lord is with me. Like, whatever happens, I don't know what's going to happen, if this is going to progress. Because people, you know, they can die if it's not treated. And so, you know, it affects the breathing, the lungs, the heart. So I was just like, Lord, like, your will, not mine. And, you know, it was at that moment that, you know, I started going through the treatment, and I sort of drifted off into a sleep. Thank goodness I wasn't allergic to Benadryl, because that was the one thing that let me rest. Because there were days and days of just, we were in there in the ICU for about, oh gosh, how long was it, Dave? 10 days or so?
Just shy of 2 weeks in the ICU.
Okay, that's right.
But collectively, it was about a month and a half in the proper hospital before moving to the rehab hospital. I think between the two, we got our Franciscan vacation. It was about, you know, 3 months and some change.
Yeah. Maybe a little longer than you initially expected. My guests are Dave and Lauren Moore. What a story. And Lauren is going to have her first public performance since being hospitalized with Guillain-Barré syndrome on Tuesday, November 4th, 7:30 p.m., the Meyerson Symphony Center. And Lauren, both of you have provided such a great explanation of what happened and the symptoms and the recovery. Is it now something that you just live with and tolerate and mitigate, or is this something that you are gradually healing from entirely?
So there are aspects definitely that physically I have healed. I'm able to move and walk, eat with a fork again, you know, the basic things of life that seemed so difficult, you know, 5-6 months ago. However, I do live with the sort of that burning pain. So I mitigate it with some medication, and, you know, my doctors are hopeful that, you know, one day I will wean off of that. And that is also my hope as well. But I'm very grateful. The team of doctors, the team of PT, OT, all of the different therapists really worked with me to help me gain momentum inch by inch throughout all those days. And I set that goal for November 4th in about, you know, midway through my PT journey, because I was able to sing. I couldn't sing for long because my ribs were weak. My diaphragm was very weak. A lot of my intercostal muscles were just not strong. But I, with the rate I was going, I said, okay, I really like to do this special event for Dallas, for the people who gathered around us and rallied around us during this really difficult time and stood by our family. For all of those who, you know, who could be touched by the music of our ministry, and really create a moment for the church this year to come together and to pray, to sing, and to really encounter the Lord.
Yeah. So, Dave, tell us about the event. I love the name, by the way. The More We Are, live at the Meyerson, MOORE, The More We Are. great name. How'd y'all, what was the brainstorm behind that? And tell our listeners what they can expect that evening.
Yeah. I think the name, it was kind of a friend of ours who, I mean, I'll be honest, Dave, like Lauren said, she was rehabbing, and I actually remember Lauren kind of talking about the event before she was able to sing, and the fact that she was going to set a goal to come back and share her voice with the diocese. And I remember when she said that, I remember coming home and trying to hide my tears from our daughter, because in my mind, I didn't know if God was going to give us the blessing of her singing again. And, you know, I sat down with a friend of mine as Lauren was still in the rehab hospital, and it had been made clear that November 4th was a target date for her. She needed to set this kind of goal, and we needed to help her achieving these milestones in her rehab. And this was something she had her eyes set on. I remember sitting down with a friend of mine, and I was like, this is going to be different than anything we've done. And not necessarily, you know, stylistically, if you will, like this is about it needs to focus on the Lord. We believe that our artistry is a gift from God, and what we do with our artistry is we give back to Him what always has been His. And so one of the core values of our ministry is that the bride of Christ supersede our artistic ambition, our need to kind of have a unique worldly brand does not come before serving the people of God in the mission of the church. Serving the church comes first. And so we were kind of sitting down with a friend, Brian McAdams, who is just a really incredible mind. And I kind of shared with him my dismay of, like, I would imagine this is how we would do a night like this, but it's more than a concert. It's a moment for our family, and it's a moment for our community. What do you think? And he was like, he took a few moments, and he went into John, and he read out chapter 10. What is the abundant life? It's trusting in God. It's hoping in God. It's surrendering to God. It's building community. It's living in the joy of the gospel and sharing a light in a dark world. And maybe having faith in our weakness because we rely on God's strength, and standing tall when things seem bleak and dim, and learning that hope is not about crossing your fingers. It's about firmly planting your feet on the ground. And when we do that, the more we are.
Yeah.
So it's more of a call to action to understand that we could not have gotten through this as a family, first and foremost, without the Diocese of Dallas and all the members of the body that have raised us up to stand when we were weak, you know. And God used our faith and our community to be a pillar we could cling to when we were broken.
Yes.
And that gives us a little different call to action with our voice. And it really does kind of embody what this event is about, because you'll experience in the event kind of, you know, I mean, we love serving at SMU Catholic, and sometimes we get to go to, you know, UTD and the University of Dallas and some of the other young adult ministries, the 635 with the diocese. And we've been serving at a lot of these events, targeting kind of young adults who oftentimes are coming and going. And, you know, we always hope that people get plugged in and stay in Dallas, but some of them move on. And I'll never forget kind of sending out to our email list, hey, we're going to do this event. And the first girl to respond, she's in med school at like Brown University. She was she was like, I wouldn't miss this for the world. I'm coming. Mm. And so there's all these alumni students and local alumni and current students that we've worked with that are getting involved. And then a bunch of, symphony players through the help of Deb Fabian and different amazing teachers and players. We have a chamber orchestra, and it was just a real communal effort to say, and then Dr. Conradi on the organ, and, you know, I mean, just to name a few, I definitely don't want to leave somebody out, so I'm going to stop mentioning names there. It's a night, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of people.
So. Yeah, Tuesday, November 4th, 7:30 p.m., Meyerson Symphony Center, The More We Are. It's Dave and Lauren Moore live at the Meyerson. Lauren Moore's first public performance since being hospitalized with Guillain-Barré syndrome back in January. And Lauren, David, thank you so much for that, your aspect of it. And I can tell that you were just the rock, as Lauren has described, in this healing process. And Lauren, I just have two or three minutes remaining in the interview, and I thank both of you so much for taking time. And I keep thinking that, you know, especially in light of the title, I just wonder if you've gone through this a realization in your trust and surrender to God that you are more than a voice. You've probably heard, 10,000 times people say, "I love your voice. Your voice is so great." But you had to come to grips with the fact that you may not have ever sung again. And now you are singing again. And that whole process of realizing that your dignity is beyond your amazing talent, that must have been pretty profound this year.
Absolutely, David. I think, the Lord made it clear to me, and, I felt it to my core that, my first, I've known this, but I feel like I can live it more fully now that, my first and foremost vocation is my marriage and my calling as a mother to our family. And, being apart from Dave and Abigail for all that time, because, we didn't have Abigail around to see me in such a state. So I saw her, a couple months in, and the moment she raced to me and said, "Mom, I'm going to be at home with you and I'm going to cook for you and do these things." And I broke down. She's like, "I know, Lord, that you are, continually, stirring in my heart this vocation of motherhood and of being a loving wife and spouse." And I just, more than ever, I felt that call and that clarity from the Lord. That's the most important part of my journey of faith. And that really stuck out to me.
Yeah. Well, gosh, I wish we had another hour to talk to you, and maybe we can have a follow-up interview as we get closer to this event, but we are out of time, and I'm so grateful. Dave and Lauren Moore, it's been so amazing to watch the Catholic Music Initiative grow through these years, and then 2025, what an amazing year it has been of Lauren's illness and now the recovery, and now this, the more we are live at the Meyerson. I just ask everybody to show up, support, celebrate, part of the community, and also just, I know the Moores are so grateful for all the prayers that were offered up for Lauren and the family over these months since all this happened. So we'll leave it at that. Dave and Lauren Moore, thank you again. I just want to remind everybody, the event is Tuesday, November 4th at the Meyerson Symphony Center. The More We Are, live at the Meyerson, Dave and Lauren Moore, and you can get your tickets there. Seating is limited, so if you're listening this and saying, "I want to go," well, get your tickets because they will run out eventually. Dave and Lauren, thank you very much. God bless you. And we'll look forward to seeing you November 4th.
Thank you, David.
All right. This has been the North Texas Interview of the Week here on the Guadalupe Radio Network. Thank you for listening. And thank you for Cecil Anderson for running the board. And we do this twice every Saturday. If you have suggestions for future interviews, you can email me directly, DavePalmer@grnonline.com. And if you would like to get tickets for this concert, this special concert called The More We Are, it's Tuesday evening, November 4th, live at the Meyerson Symphony Center. Go to their...
Thanks for listening to KATH 910 AM Frisco, Dallas, Fort Worth, and North Texas on the Guadalupe Radio Network, Catholic radio for your soul. Heard also at grnonline.com and on your smartphone.
I have to go to Mass. The joy, I have joy in my spirit.